Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to our presentation today. This is what to expect during your stage one audit. My name is Joe Krolikowski. I am the QMS program manager for Perry Johnson Registrars. A couple of notes for all of you. All of our participants today are on mute, but we absolutely want to address your questions. So please utilize the question portion of the dashboard. We'll take your questions at the end of the presentation. One of the more common questions that we get is whether or not the presentation will be available after we're finished. We do make our webinars available in two key ways. First of all, if you'd like to get a copy of the slides, those will be available for download direct from our website shortly after we're finished. And if you'd like to rewatch this webinar with the voiceover, we do post all of our webinar recordings to our YouTube page. And again, you can get to that by looking at our website. Just look for the link entitled Previously Recorded Webinars. Now, our topics for today, we're going to talk briefly about why certification is done in two stages, why the Stage 1 audit exists, as it were. We're going to talk about how this begins at quotation and what goes on prior to the Stage 1 audit. We're going to then take you through the Stage 1 audit sort of front to back and give you a sense of what's looked at during the Stage 1 assessment. And we're also going to try to highlight for you the things that can prevent you from continuing to Stage 2. Obviously, if you're going through a Stage 1, what you're hoping for is to be able to sail through to the Stage 2 assessment. And we'll finish with some thoughts on how you can use the Stage 1 results to be better prepared for that Stage 2 assessment. And then definitely we will take your questions at the end of the presentation. So let's begin with why we do certification in two stages. Well, the primary reason is because we have to. One of the many requirements that PJR is held accountable to is the ISO 17021-1 standard. You can kind of think of that as an ISO standard for certification bodies. And that standard has a clause that states that an initial certification audit shall be conducted in two stages, stage one and stage two. Now, the intent behind the approach is to ensure that only those companies that are truly prepared for a certification assessment get to go through the full audit. So in other words, if the really basic entry-level stuff is missing, that does not bode well for the system at large, and it would be a waste of resources for us to send an auditor in to look at the whole system if those basic pieces aren't there in the first place. Now, obviously, before we can do a Stage 1 audit at your facility, you have to be under contract with PJR. Now, to get under contract, we have a series of documents that we use. We call them the F1 series. These are applications, and we use our application to try to facilitate the audit process before it even begins. And these F1 documents, when you apply to be a PJR client, these are very detailed documents. You know, you're probably wondering, my goodness, why are they asking for all of this information? Well, we're doing it for a couple of reasons. Most importantly, we want to make sure that we are giving you as competitive a quotation as we possibly can. We want to give you all the discounts we can give you. We want to give you all the considerations that we are allowed to. But we can't do any of that without the information in the first place. Now, if you are shopping around for a certification body, if you're in the midst of getting quotations, and PJR is one of the companies that you're looking at, well, there's some things you need to be aware of. You need to bear in mind that we are supposed to be working on a level playing field in terms of audit duration. And the tool that we use for that is a document called MD5. Now, this is from the International Accreditation Forum, or IAF, and it's a publication that stipulates, here's the number of audit days that you're supposed to perform for a company with blank number of employees. That's the basic thing that MD5 does. But it also provides guidelines on here's what you can offer discounts for. Here's how much of a discount you're allowed to take. And the maximum discount per MD5 is 30%. Now, if any of you are new to the certification world, any of the IAF publications, including MD5, they're all public domain. So if you do a Google search for IAF MD5, you can download a copy for yourself, and you'll know exactly what a company like PJR is applying when we give you our quotation. And you want to be very careful if you're looking at a competitor's quote and it's just drastically different. It's possible that that competitor is not accredited or they're not following the MD5 requirements. Now, before you are audited, obviously, you need to have someone who is going to schedule the audit. Now, we refer to these folks as audit program coordinators. You will probably refer to that person as your scheduler. Now, your scheduler is going to be your primary point of contact here at PJR. They're going to be the ones that are going to assist you with getting your audits arranged and answering questions that you have beforehand. We train our schedulers to assign auditors that are qualified in your standard, obviously, and competent in the technical area. So what that means is you may have someone who is an ISO 9001 auditor, but maybe they have little to no experience auditing an organization that works in recycling, or auditing an organization that works in the plastics business, and so forth. So that's one of the things that our schedulers, that they have to be very careful about. Now, obviously, we all recognize that travel is expensive right now. We want to try to use local auditors where we can, but understand that our schedulers need to work around some of these other challenges as well. Now, one of the things that you will get from your scheduler prior to the Stage 1 audit, it's another document. It's a F108. Now, this is an attestation of readiness. Now, let's go over what's on that F108 in the next slide here. You can think of the F108 as a checklist, and it runs down and it identifies all of the things that you need to have ready for your auditor on the day of the Stage 1 audit. Now, the list that I've prepared on the screen here, this is pretty much universal across all scopes. There's a couple of items on here where there's going to be some variation, but for the most part, all of these items are applicable. So what do you have to do? Well, you have to know what your scope is. You have to know what your processes are. You have to know what your KPIs, your process measures are. You have to have things arranged for internal audits, for management review, and so forth. So right down the line, you are going to be told, here's what's going to be expected of you. And by signing off on this, you are acknowledging, yes, I have all of these things in place. I'm ready for my Stage 1 audit. Now, I want to take a second to talk about the very last item on this checklist here, and it's PGR form F-191. Let's go ahead and jump ahead a slide here. Okay, the F-191, this is something that we've had for a very long time. It's another document that you'll get ahead of the audit. And what it is intended to do is to ensure that the processes that you've established for your system represent a fulfillment of all the clauses of the applicable standard. So the intent is that you're going to work from your interaction of processes or whatever you've positioned as the representation of your processes and assign the clause numbers accordingly. So let's go through an example of how that might work. Okay, so let's say that this is the organization's interaction of processes. We've got several items identified here, and we've got kind of a process key in the lower left-hand corner. Now, if we identify, therefore, that there are six processes associated with this organization, sales order entry, purchasing, production, shipping, quality, and support. Now, if you are sent the F-191, here is the intent of what you need to do with those named processes. Okay, so as you can see, we've listed out the processes on the left-hand side here, and throughout this table, we've identified which clause numbers apply to which processes. Now, the intent here is that you should have a sufficient cross-section of processes that every single clause has representation. That's kind of the primary purpose of this document. Now, obviously, some processes are going to contribute to more clauses than others. You may notice, for example, that every process is seen as contributing to Section 7.5. That's probably because 7.5 gets into documentation control. You may notice, obviously, that the process called support contributes to every clause. And I'm sure there's underlying logic associated with that as well. You probably also notice that none of these clauses are identified as contributing to clause 8.3. Excuse me, none of these processes are contributing to clause 8.3. Obviously, our takeaway with that is that this organization is not responsible for the design of its products. So we have now, by virtue of this being prepared, we know what the processes are. We know what clause numbers they contribute to. Now, on audit day, we do encourage stage one audits to be conducted on site. I'm going to get into what that means in just a second here. We do offer what we call off-site stage one audits as well. So in an off-site arrangement, what happens is you are not in synchronous communication with your auditor. Your auditor is working from home. They are sent the materials, and they kind of call you or email you on an as-needed basis. That's considered an off-site audit. Now, understand that we do also offer a virtual stage one audit option. Now, if a virtual audit is performed, that means that you are in synchronous communication with the auditor. You're in a Teams meeting or a Zoom meeting, and you are reviewing the information together. Virtual auditing, if it is done in accordance with the industry requirements, is considered equivalent to an on-site assessment. So bear that in mind. Now, if you are doing a virtual or an on-site audit, or even an off-site audit, you should expect to be contacted by your auditor a few days in advance of the stage one assessment. You should also expect an audit plan, and you need to confirm that whatever is on the audit plan is correct and advise your auditor if it is not correct. One more point I want to make on this slide. If you choose to have an offsite audit, not a virtual, but an offsite audit, understand that ultimately this is going to mean more total audit time, because an offsite audit does not count towards the onsite assessment time required for a stage one audit. Now, for a very small organization, it may work out to being a wash in terms of how that plays out. For a larger organization, it may mean some additional assessment time during stage two. Okay, you should expect an opening meeting to be performed. Now, this is going to be an excellent chance to confirm any last minute changes in details and to make sure that your auditor is aware of any visitors that you're going to have, personnel availability, and so forth. Now, from there, obviously, the audit will transpire as outlined in the auditor's plan. The auditor will use a PJR Stage 1 workbook to record the results of their assessments. Now, just about everything that's looked at in a Stage 1 is documentation-based, and it's going to result in one of two possible outcomes. You're either going to have the item marked as conforms, or potentially it will be flagged as concern. Now, we define concern as anything that represents a disconnect between what you've implemented and the related requirement from the applicable standard, ISO 9001, for example. Now, once the auditor has completed their assessment, they will need some time, obviously, to prepare a report that will reflect what those results are. Now, understand that there are no official nonconformances in a Stage 1 audit. There are only concerns, as I mentioned in the prior slide. Now, once the audit report has been put together, closing meeting will be held to discuss the results. Now, there are four possible outcomes from a Stage 1 audit. I want to go through these very carefully. The first and most desirable outcome is recommendation for continuance to Stage 2 with no concerns. Second outcome, recommend for continuance to Stage 2 with only very minor concerns. The third option, this one is a little bit newer, cannot proceed to Stage 2 as a result of significant concerns identified, but these will be handled through verification by PJR prior to Stage 2 being approved to proceed. We're going to unpack what that means over the next few slides. And then the most severe of the outcomes, cannot be approved to proceed to Stage 2. The Stage 1 is to be repeated. Now, you will be asked to sign an acknowledgement of the Stage 1 results, and you'll be given a copy of the completed report. Now, you know, if we have travel circumstances or whatnot, it may be a couple of extra days before you get the finalized report, but you'll definitely know as a result of that closing meeting what the outcome was, what the results were. Now, there are a number of things that can prevent continuance to a Stage 2 audit, and I'd like to go over these kind of carefully. Firstly, if you don't have an acceptable interaction of processes, or IOP, so what do we mean by that? Well, if you have an IOP that resembles the Plan, Do, Check, Act diagram from the standard, if you have an IOP that gives the sections of ISO 9001 itself as your processes, if you have something that was from a consultant but it bears no resemblance to what you're actually doing, any of these would potentially be flagged as inadequate or inappropriate. Now, remember, you're supposed to have an IOP that is as unique to your organization as possible. Now, we do offer a webinar entirely devoted to this topic. It's entitled The Interaction of Processes and its importance to a successful audit. Now understand that the IOP, the interaction of processes, is the single best indicator that you understand the process approach that's prescribed by ISO 9001. So it's a very important item. It's possible that you may not have things fully put together for your process measurables or the performance data that supports them. Now, ISO 9001 requires you to monitor, measure where applicable, and analyze your processes. So our expectation is that every process on your interaction of processes document is going to be monitored or measured. And we need to see performance data available that's going to prove that you're doing the monitoring and measurement. Now, in some standards, there's minimum requirements for the amount of data that has to be available. A good example of this is ITF, which requires 12 months worth of performance data. Now, for a lot of the other standards, you just have to have enough objective evidence to demonstrate that the process works. Some organizations, in fact, may choose just to have a few measures of effectiveness that cover all processes, kind of universal objectives, if you will. That's going to be generally acceptable as well. If you have inadequate internal auditor competency records, that can be a hindrance to continuing to stage two. Now understand that internal auditing is a competency in the same vein as any other competency within your organization. In other words, it's up to you to determine what it means to be competent to perform an internal audit. But we are going to ask for proof that you've set your requirements and that you've held your internal auditors accountable to those requirements. Now, again, depending on what standard you're seeking certification to, there may be additional industry requirements that will apply to internal auditor competency. Now, a big item that we got more focus on starting last year was the internal audit itself. And we were informed that internal audit records needed to include evidence that internal audits are planned, that we have evidence that the audit was carried out, that nonconformances were documented, and that you have responded to those nonconformities, and that you did not have auditors auditing their own work. Now, what was new about this last year was we were told we had to take a much harder line on this. In the past, it was acceptable if we could see that the internal audit was going to be completed prior to the stage two audit. We could kind of allow the stage one to be passing on the basis of a plan. That is no longer the case. If we show up for stage one and your internal audit is incomplete and it's planned, we cannot approve you to proceed to stage two. This is a good example of something where we're not going to do a full repeat on the stage one, but we can't let that stage two proceed until this issue is resolved. And that same logic basically applies for management review as well. Now, with management review, of course, you've got a long list of required inputs and outputs, and we need to see evidence that all of those topics are included in the management review meeting process. Now, sometimes we get questions about, do we have to perform our management review meetings a particular way? Well, bear in mind, you can have PowerPoint slides that show what you've discussed. Those are not mandatory. You can have a standardized agenda. That's not mandatory either. But we do need to be able to confirm that you've hit all of the required discussion topics. Now, again, if we do not have evidence that a complete management review meeting has been performed, the stage two audit will not be approved to proceed. You will have to send us that evidence and close that loop before the stage two audit can take place. Now, all conclusions from a stage one are subject to executive committee concurrence. In other words, all of these audits get reviewed. And in other words, we want to make sure that the decisions that are reached are appropriate and fair. Now, you also should be aware that you have the right to dispute or appeal the auditor's decision, including for a stage one audit. The auditor concludes that you're not ready to proceed, and maybe in the extreme case, you need to repeat the stage one audit. Well, you can file a dispute for that and get an impartial weigh-in on that from PJR. And we have a procedure for that entitled Pro 10. Pro 10 is available to download direct from our website. It's public domain. Now, if the recommendation is for a full repeating of the stage one audit, we encourage you to work from your audit report to shore up the issues that were raised. You're definitely allowed to stay in contact with your auditor and with us here at PJR headquarters to discuss what you're doing and to make sure that you're on the right path to have a better result during the repeat stage one assessment. Also, you should expect to receive a contract amendment from PJR for the repeat stage one audit. Now, in most cases, this is going to mean a rescheduling of the stage two audit. We're going to have to push it back. This is precisely why we recommend a minimum of 30 days between stage one and stage two, and better yet, more like 45 or more days. It's been our experience that back-to-back stage one and stage two audits often are going to lead to significant issues. Bear in mind, we do have a 21-day cancellation policy in terms of cancellation fees and unrecoverable travel and so forth. Now, if the recommendation is that there are significant issues, but a repeat stage one isn't needed. So for example, you haven't done your internal audit, or you don't have a complete management review, or something along those lines. We ask that you, again, work from your audit report and address those issues. Now, you'll be expected to send evidence of your corrections to us here at headquarters, and it'll get reviewed by a member of our technical staff that will issue the final approval for the stage two to be performed. So we'll work with you. We have as much interest in the stage two proceeding as you do, but we do have to kind of cross those hurdles that were identified in the stage one audit if this is the result. Now, obviously, if the recommendation is to proceed to stage two, again, still work with those reports that you're getting and shore up anything that was listed as a minor concern. It's always possible that something that was flagged as a minor concern in the stage one audit becomes a full-blown nonconformance during stage two. So in conclusion, we want you to feel confident and comfortable with the stage one audit. It is our belief that if there is the right amount of care taken in the pre-stage one phase, along with the mutual support of your auditor, this is going to help the process be as seamless as possible. We do wish you every success in your certification journey. And if you're a new PJR client, we are delighted that you've chosen us. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We do have a series of webinars specifically on ISO 9001. One of these is called Knowing What to Expect to Ensure a Stress-Free Audit. This is shown on a semi-annual basis, and it's kind of an unpacking of some of the issues that seem to come up most often in an ISO 9001 audit, and to try to understand what the expectations are. We also have our Interaction of Processes presentation that I mentioned earlier, and presentations on a wide variety of other topics, ITF 16949, 14001, and so forth. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for automatic updates on changes to the standards, upcoming webinars, and other points of information. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. Okay, very good. Wishing all of you a great day, and thank you for your attention.